This next step is made possible through a grant from Harutyun Kelaijan. What's your world view? Are you happy about it? Pessimistic? How about Happy Harry? Of all things, we'll be talking about that, plus the business of the church. Coming up, this is episode number 451, the Chalcedon Fahrenheit edition of The Next Step, and I'm inviting you to take it with us right now.
This is Susie from In His Shoes, welcoming you to our ninth year of broadcasting The Next Step. The Next Step is a step, a stride, moving us forward. Here, Father Vazgen provides his unique and distinctive voice for Armenian Orthodoxy, giving an intelligent and practical answer to the challenges of life, based on the solid principles of love, faith, and hope as expressed by Jesus Christ. It's a practical approach to melding spirit and passion in the real world. The Next Steps are serious, fun, informative, and most of all relevant, as religion should be. So get ready. We're taking the next step.
Well, of course it's Chalcedon. But there's more to it, isn't it? A number of different references from that number, right? 451. Can you believe it is episode number 451, every Thursday coming at you. 451, it happens to be the year in which, well, those of you on the ecclesiastical, ecumenical train, you know that that's an important number. That's the year in which Chalcedon met. And they said, oh, those Armenians, they can't handle what they're doing. First Christian nation, negative, man. We're going to show you what Christianity's all about. Obviously, not Armenians didn't even show up at Chalcedon. We were busy fighting a war called Avarayr, the Battle of Vartanants. Am I getting you all mixed up? Well, this is the next step. And we do a lot of cross-referencing. Happens to be episode number 451, which also happens to be the name of a Ray Bradbury novel, right? There's a lot of references. Anyway, 451... That year was an important one in the life of the church. It is the year that the church fathers continued to meet in council. And up until then, there was what we called the ecumenical council. We called the universal in Armenian, Diezaragan. So there was three meetings of these ecumenical councils, one in 325, one in 381, and one in 431, I believe it was. Ephesus, the last one. So there was the first one, Nicaea, of course, where we get the Nicene Creed. That was 325. 381 was Constantinople. And then in 431, Ephesus. This is when all the churches were together. Then in 451, they said, hey, let's have another meeting. And of course, Armenians couldn't make it to that meeting. Guess what? We were fighting. Well, we were fighting a battle of conscience, of Christianity. It was the first one. First one in history, 451. We were at the Battle of Avarayr and couldn't attend that council. And for good reason, too. It kind of got into things that we weren't even thinking about, you know, that wasn't necessary. Things that were later rebuked, later taken back. And so the Armenians have been this group of people that have adhered to the first three ecumenical councils. Sometimes we get labeled as Monophysite, and that is just a complete misnomer. It doesn't even describe us, but it kind of goes because they don't know where to put us in. Anyway, well, how about if we say just the original people, the original Christians, right? Keeping it all intact. And that's what you're in for, right? Because today's show is not going to have anything to do with Christology, nothing with Chalcedon, just happens to be the number 451, not even with Ray Bradbury. In fact, we're going to be going all over the place with some other stuff, but I thought I'd give you a little bit of history in there, okay? We started off with a little history lesson, and this is kind of interesting. We've talked about it in the past. It's very, very important history if you're looking at the entire global Christian community to understand that Christianity wasn't just you know, it didn't just fall out of the sky, but it's a development of ideas, of understanding God's salvific promise and work within this world. And certainly when we view it on those terms, we understand that it's much bigger than just a few people getting together and discussing things. It's about us, how practically that faith works in our lives today, as it did back in 325, 381, 431. This was part and parcel of their bones. In fact, so much so that they were even willing to stand up, lose their life for it, as we saw in Vartanants 451. So, episode number 451, welcome. Got a lot to talk to you about today. It's mostly about our lives today. Since we got off the air last week, the Trump inauguration took place the following day. I had a chance to go out to Scottsdale, Arizona, to be with the community. And a big shout out to all the lovely people that we met over there. Some next steppers, some people who came up, but we didn't even know they were listening. They had never talked to us, but were certainly knew much more than we did. I mean, it was really amazing. They came up and they started rattling off all kinds of stuff, all kinds of knowledge that they had from the next step. And it was exciting. I got to tell you, every time I meet one of those hidden next steppers, it's an exciting moment. So we also met with a group over there, Armenian Men's Group, at the church. The church, by the way, is called Saint Opgad Armenian Church. Isn't that unusual name, Opgad? Yeah. If you live in Australia, there's a cool Opgad over there. Okay, but this is Saint Opgad, first Christian king. And there is a church in Scottsdale, Arizona, named St. Opgad Armenian Church. And we had a chance to go there to celebrate the Divine Liturgy. Beautiful, beautiful setting. I think it's beautiful because if you know my history, you know how attached I am to that Southwest, to that dry climate, to that desert. And in fact, in years past, we'd make opportunities to kind of like escape over there. And now I'm realizing more than the climate. It was probably just an escape to get out and see my kid who was studying over there. But I got to tell you, as parents, probably the best compliment we got was this Sunday where just before the sermon, they introduced the guest priest and they were going to introduce me and said, the father of, and they named my son, Vardarjani. They said, he's his father. In other words, I was known through my child. Is there anything greater than that? I was just so excited. I was very, very tickled by that. Is that the word? Yeah, tickled. It made me laugh. It made me feel good, warm, as did to my wife, Susan, who was with me on that trip. And so we had a chance to really see this church that had really developed in the last, had gotten a new life in the last few years. I know there was a community. I could remember when we first were married, I would say, early, mid-80s, we took a drive out to Texas, and we passed by, and when the Archbishop found out that I was going to be going through that area, he assigned me to go and stop by at the Arizona Church and celebrate the Divine Liturgy. And so during those formative years, I remember the church, the community, gathering inside of a small hall, and there we celebrated the Divine Liturgy. And that's just the story of most Armenian communities. People coming together, realizing that there's an importance in faith, realizing it's that faith that keeps us together. It's that hope that comes with faith. It's the love that we have. And all of these combined spells church. And that church gets together and it grows. And it's beautiful to see it at this growth moment, to see it in all its forms, and including an Armenian men's group. Oh, the reason why I was telling you about Armenian men's, because they're short. It's not an acronym, but they go by Armenian men, short for Amen, right? Okay, the name of the group is Amen, Amen, Armenian men. A beautiful name. I thought it was nice, especially so convenient around a church. And some kind of wild things, too, that you kind of find when you go out to these places. A gentleman comes up to me, so excited, starts talking to me really loud, and his name escapes me, but his stage name is Johnny Blue. Do you know that name? Johnny Blue. Anyway, he told me that he was one of the big ones out in Beirut back in the 1970s. There was Adis Harmanian, there was Levon Katerjan, names that we knew. Johnny Blue, he said, I used to play with them. And he says, I'm here. I says, I meet with them. I'm meeting with Adis next week, and we're going to be talking about a new project we're doing, and so on and so on. Just a very happy man, you know, and coming up to me. You can tell that he's an entertainer just by his voice power and quality, you know. He was talking to me, but then he threw out a name that I hadn't heard in a long time, Happy Harry. He says, do you remember Happy Harry? Well, yeah, if you happen to be living in, especially in the Southern California area back in the 60s, 70s, this is a name that was a household name, Happy Harry Hadigian. This was the first Armenian, well, no, excuse me, it wasn't the first Armenian show, but he was a very popular Armenian show. I believe there was one, Michael Minassian, who came before Happy Harry, and before Michael Minassian, there was an older one. The names escape me. But Happy Harry kind of brought together that form of just kind of blasting at you in the morning. It was on at Sundays at 10 o'clock. My wife, Susan, remembers. She's a family of six kids, of, you know, getting in the car in the big station wagon and driving to church, and Dad blasting Happy Harry on the radio. It was on AM radio. I can't remember the call. It was KTYM. That's it. Okay, KTYM. I don't even know if they're around, but those were the call letters, 1460 or something like that. Anyway, it was an AM because, by the way, AM was the only thing we used to get on the car radio. And the same thing was true with our family, too. We'd just get all in the car and, you know, Mom, Dad, they would just blast Happy Harry. And you'd hear this kind of fuzzed up song. It was called the Armenian March. It was from the 78s. Let's see if it's got to be in my collection someplace. If we have it, we'll run it right now. Yeah, that's it. Okay, that's that's called Armenian March. And it was one of the old 78s. And anyway, every Sunday morning, this is what he would start off with. And then the first song that he'd play, full song that he would play before the cut-in, was a church song. And he was, I guess, the original, here's the song of the week, okay? He's the original song of the week guy. And then he would play all kinds of Armenian music. He'd make announcements and tell you what's going on. And it was just an interesting show. I would say it probably ended in the early 80s, if not maybe a little bit before. I got to see him just before his death. I was at the St. Gregory Church in Pasadena, and he visited me one Sunday. And we had a chance to talk, and it was about a month or two later that we heard that he had passed away. But an institution back in the 70s, an institution, late 60s. So anyway, this guy kind of connected us with that too. Why do I tell you all this? Well, you know, we're going to be talking in the second portion of today's show about the structure of the church, what's important about the church, having Christianity by itself, or how important is it to have a means by which that Christianity can arrive to us. And certainly the church is that business, quote unquote business. And by that, I don't mean as a money making, but in other words, a business that it is. It gives structure. It has its rules and regulations by which we run the greater good of what we're doing. But before we go there, what happened last Friday? Holy moly. President Trump was inaugurated as president, 45th president of the United States. And we listened in, and I'm sure by now if you didn't listen to the actual live broadcast, you've caught the speech or at least bits and pieces of it. Pretty bleak, huh? He paints just such a pessimistic picture of America, of what did he call it? Carnage. American carnage. Talked about the educational system where we don't learn anything. It's kind of hard to believe that, you know, this is the America we're living in. It was very, very pessimistic. And my head went to, you know, what we've had in the past. Do you know that one of the worst depressions back in the 1930s, and President Roosevelt rising, leading the people, not by centering on the negativism, but talking about the only fear that we have is fear itself. You know, World War II came about during the 40s. We entered the United States. The rumblings were there in the 30s. Very, very bleak times, very difficult times, very fearful times, opportunities for pessimism. Even farther back in history, you look at Civil War here in the United States, and President Lincoln rising as a leader and giving people that hope. And so this was very odd for me. You know, we're not, as I've shared with you many times, if you're listening to the show, right, you're better off than most people in the world. Why? Because you have the technology to listen to it, which means that you are in a certain different category and everything. And certainly most people in America are in that category. Yes, does that mean that this is utopia? Absolutely not, the farthest thing. Does this mean that everybody's comfortable? Does this mean that there's no room for improvement? Absolutely not. No, we do need to improve. There are many, many things that we need to do. But this painting of a pessimistic nature of just negative carnage, American carnage. And then what happened in the next few days, just it kind of blows your mind. I can't understand it. And you know what? We're not a political show. We're not going to get into the politics. But it does bother me. It does bother me because it is setting a tone in this country, a tone which unfortunately is going to take a while to unravel. But unfortunately, it's affecting other people's tones. You know, when he talks about this is an opportunity for a new beginning. This is the day that we're starting and everything. Listen to the speech. And this is interesting. Susan made a really good point about this as we were listening to the speech. Take out the word again. Just that word, which is used multiple times throughout the speech. Take out that word again, and you have a pretty good speech that anybody could buy into. But it's that word again that is offensive. For instance, we will make America great again. We will have good opportunities again. Meaning that right now it's not good there. It's not great now. You know, it's like very offensive, especially when you have the people, the regimes, the presidents who were there before you sitting up there. It also requires a bit of tact. This is basically the business of America. And that tack was totally thrown out the next day, where we saw him bringing up issues that I can't imagine, okay? He won the election. So you need to say thank you. You need a moment of humility. You need to take a chill pill. You need to take a deep breath. But instead, it was this offensive on people that didn't vote for him and, you know, calling all kinds of miscalculations because of voter fraud here in America. Now, is anybody going to argue with you that there isn't voter fraud? But at the levels he's saying, 2, 3, 4 million people illegally voted? Come on. Come on. He talks about people who are registered in two states. Okay, now just think about the logistics of this. Okay, so you're, let's say for me, I'm registered in California and Arizona. If that were the case, so on election day, I have to get up and vote here in California and then think enough that my vote's going to matter, run over across the border to Arizona. Let's assume that it's a ride that I can do, maybe, you know, a half an hour, whatever it is, to go over there and vote, take a risk that I could get caught, incarcerated, spend time in federal prison because I want to vote in two states. Okay, now how many people are doing this? Millions? We're talking maybe about 10, maybe 20, maybe 100. I mean, if you've got 150 million people voting, okay, what is that? 100 people. Is that really the game changer? Think about it for a moment. What is this man saying? And the more and more he talks, the more and more bizarre he gets. And so last Saturday, there was an incredible show of protest, grassroots movement, people getting out on the street. A little bit too little, too late, I feel. But there was a lot of people talking about, you know, we're not going to accept this. And he completely ignored that, too. So really, it's kind of bizarre. Last night, we saw his first interview on the press. Really, it is bizarre. It's like living in the Twilight Zone with the lights on. That's what I feel like. You're in the Twilight Zone, but the lights are on. And you're realizing this is real. This is real, okay? Maybe that's the quote that we need to go with. Anyway, like I said, I am not going to go anymore. It's not about the politics that I'm talking about. You can be of any persuasion that you want. That's not the scope of this show. It's the question of what are we spiritually, emotionally, how are we interpreting some of this stuff? And it plays on you because negativism is one of the fastest growing diseases. You know that in your homes too. You sit with a few friends that go down the negative road. You get negative too. You get power from people, right? The people start talking to you and they start telling you about their pains and their sufferings. And you feel like, oh yeah, well, you know it because I've been there too. Why do you think that music, think about some of the music, think about country music, some of the popular songs of country music, think about stars that make their whole career out of talking about the human state in a depressive way and people react to it. And you've got stadiums of people packing in to listen and buying their music. Why? Because they relate and they can understand that that happy feeling. The other day I was in the car. My wife got in and said, what are you listening to? I had the Mexican station on and I don't speak Spanish. I know very, very little Spanish, but I just loved the music. It was like happy. There was some accordion. There was some riffs. They were singing at the top of their lungs, and it was exciting. And you know what? It was right after this, all this was going on. I was driving by myself, and I found that station. I said, this is good stuff. I don't understand it, but you know what? It's happy music. So I turned it on. And sometimes you need to just maybe turn the station from what you got and open it up and get a little bit happy too. So it was really more of this negative stuff that I was hearing that was kind of bothersome. And then on top of it, what was the next thing that he did was just wild. I'm not understanding. You won the election and then now you're calling people on it like and saying that, okay, there's voter fraud. Hey, that's up to the guy who lost to say there's voter fraud. But you won the election, okay? You win the election and then you get out and you say that there's the crowds. And this was really sad. It was kind of pathetic. And I guess that's the word that I want to convey today, the patheticness of it. That here's a world leader. Here's arguably the most powerful man in the world. Here's the leader of the so-called free world. You know, and he's comparing the size of crowds. You know, it's basically feed my ego. And that was really, really, really sad. So you see, it's not about the politics that I'm talking about. I'm talking about this mindset in the world that we need to get off of. And we do have a means of getting off of it. The second portion of our show, right after the song today, I want to share with you some ideas. We talked a little bit last week about the head coverings. We'll go down there, but in a little bit broader sense, talk about money, about business in the church, and how it can work, how it affects us. Right now, I'm going to pick a song of the day. How about Louis Armstrong? Do you need to pick me up? I do. And I heard this song the other day. I just loved it. It's a nonsensical song, right? About rolling around on heaven all day, okay? I hope you enjoy it. Louis Armstrong.
Up in the morning, out on the job, work like the devil for my pay. But that lucky old sun has was nothing to do but roll around heaven all day. Fuss with my woman, toil for my kids, sweat till I'm wrinkled in gray, while that lucky old son has nothing to do but roll around heaven all day. Good Lord up above, can't you know I'm pining? Tears all in my eyes. Send down that cloud with the silver lining. Lift me to paradise. Show me that river. Take me across and wash all my troubles away. Like that lucky old son, give me nothing to do but roll around heaven all day. Take me across and wash all my troubles away. Like that lucky old son, give me nothing to do but roll around
heaven,
oh, roll around
heaven,
heaven all day.
Son rolling on heaven in heaven all day. Wow, isn't that beautiful? I hope you like that. I needed that song. I needed that song this week. I mean, it's just too much. Everywhere you turn, I mean, they're talking about this negativism, this pessimism, this optimism that is fueled by the negativism. And I just couldn't take it. Anyway, I needed that. I needed a little break and kind of like went into that little la la land over there, which yeah, I know. Yeah, that won a bunch of nominations too, right? Anyway, I went to the Louis Armstrong La La Land. I needed that. I'll have a link on today's show notes. We pick out a song every week, and we focus on that just for a few minutes, just to kind of break up the show. But today we'll have a chance to break it up in a different way. So hang on. We're coming right back. In the second portion of today's show, I want to talk a little bit about the business of the church, about money issues, about some of the habits that we have. You know, last week I talked about the head coverings and just got a wonderful call from a very close friend. He said, you know, you were a little hard on what's going on. It's not like that. And I went in back and I listened. Was it really like that? You know what? If I had offended a particular group and I talked about coming out of the Glendale Church because these are just activities that have happened in my life over the last few months, I had come out and we had really tried very hard to set a pattern, a way of what a church can be. And those people that would come to the Glendale Church, would come to that church on the corner, knew that they were getting a very special difference in Armenian church. And it wasn't everyone's fair. I have to be honest with you. Not everybody liked it, you know, but it was something that we tried. And so I talked about that a little bit. And definitely last week, if there was any comments that were misconstrued to thinking about like, that it was about a particular church, I am sorry. I apologize. It wasn't about any particular church. It was just an incident that had happened, and I labeled it as such. But this is endemic throughout all of the Armenian churches. And in fact, I said it last week that throughout not only the Armenian churches, but most mainline traditional churches, this idea of putting the head coverings on the women. And when I challenged you and I showed you in scripture the reason why those head coverings were put on, because St. Paul says that women are not, that man is for the glory of God, women is for the glory of men. And I challenged you that, come on, you know, there's certain things that we have to start accepting that as human beings, as people, as a society, as a community, we have evolved. And are these things that will prevent us from heaven? No, these were things that made sense at a certain particular time. The things that will prevent you from heaven, that will prevent you from actualizing the beauty of your life in this world, is your compassion, is your love towards other people. And this is what Jesus preached. Jesus never said, cover your head. Just the opposite. When the prostitute came up to him, he embraced her. He said, go and sin no more. He stopped at that point and says, it's about your actions, not about what you're wearing, not about the dirt that's around you, not about covering your hair. It's about the actions that you have in your life. And so a bigger apology if anybody took that to mean about their church. But over the last 4 months since I've gotten out of Glendale, we've had a chance to go to all kinds of different churches. We get assigned, and part of the outreach ministry, part of the youth ministry is getting out there and talking to different communities. And everywhere that I've gone for divine liturgy for the Balderach, yes, this is a custom. Okay, they have this big basket of head coverings, and they bring it up to the front of the procession line, and they offer it to the women. They put it on at different levels of offering. Some of them are forced. Some of them are handed, some of them are just laid there. But at every church we've gone to, this is the custom. Now, that head covering, think about it for a moment. Why would St. Paul say it? Why would you have it? Well, St. Paul might have talked about the glory of man, and these were important concepts that in a society in which he was in. But think about it in a practical term, too. You're going to church, and the focus of church should be the activity at the altar, right? The Holy Eucharist, the holy body and blood of Jesus Christ is being prepared. And all of your attention should be at the focal point, should be right at that altar table. Because, in fact, it is a reenactment of the Last Supper, or the Holy Eucharist. So you could imagine being at the supper with Jesus, sitting there, and while he is making these pronouncements about, this is my body, this is my blood, take it, and this is the wine of the new covenant. This is an opportunity for you to have everlasting life. Think about while he's saying that, you're looking out the window. Really? Or think about that you're being distracted because your iPhone's on and you're playing a game. Well, that's about what's happening right now. There is a beautiful, if you read Armenian, I'm going to challenge you to look at it. I've posted it on my Facebook page. It is a priest in Armenia who wrote something very beautiful. I loved it. He talks about his friend in the diaspora, somebody, I guess, from America had told him, you know, the reason why we don't go to church are for two reasons. If there's bad weather, we stay in. If it's good weather, we go out with the family. And this priest said, yeah, and here in Armenia, there's even more excuses. People say that, you know, I want to stay home because I have so much work to do. And he says, what work is there at home? You know, I mean, who gets work done at home? It's more relaxing. Be honest with it. He said, the real reason, and I've shared this with you many times, the real reason why we don't go to church is because we don't understand that the Holy Divine Liturgy is our means. The Sur Badarak is our means of connecting with Jesus Christ. It's to be a recipient of the Holy Eucharist, the communion. And that the word itself tells you what it is. It's to commune with God by receiving the body and blood. So imagine you're at that Last Supper, and while Jesus is talking, you're distracted by looking outside the window, outside the door, or the peddler that comes to the door. You're talking to him. Meanwhile, Jesus is going through this beautiful dinner and explaining the course of human salvation. Same thing in church. If we are to believe that the Holy Eucharist, the divine liturgy, is the preparation of this opportunity to connect with the divine, okay? What else are we supposed to be looking at? And so, you know, one of the things that we always emphasize in our church, when you get into church, come to the farthest front pew that there is, seat that there is. By going into the back, what's happening? You're going to be distracted by everybody who comes into the church, right? And there is a group of people that come and they sit in the back. They check out everybody who's coming into church down the aisle, what they're wearing, what shoes they have on, and so on. Go to the front. Then now your mind can't be distracted. And I would, if I was writing a New Testament thing, epistle today, 2017, be assured that we would probably put, as you go into church, walk in the front. That's all St. Paul was really trying to get at. Because if you're a woman, you're beautiful. And you're going to distract men's attention. That's the bottom line. So put a head covering on and cover yourself. Well, we've evolved past that. And we realize it's not, you know, men, control yourselves. Don't look, okay? Why should the burden be on the women? And we've gone through this. We've talked about this ad nauseum. And at this point, at 2017, when we realized that we're talking about equal wages for women, that equal partners on the playing field of life, we can't be talking about putting head coverings on because men cannot control their sight. At some point, we all need to take responsibility for what we're doing. And so think about it in those terms. When you go to church, it's not about putting a head covering on. It's not being distracted. It's not just the person putting a head covering on. It's the other person. Don't be distracted. One of our boys the other day was on the altar, a young boy. I would say he's about 7, 8 years old. Throughout the whole divine liturgy, he's holding his candle with his head turned towards the people. And I can't help but watch this. It distracted me. He, unfortunately, will grow up because there's no supervision at that altar. He's, unfortunately, going to grow up with this idea that he is kingpin because he has a candle. And so now he is at a higher level, right? Physically, too, at the altar. He has the ability to look down at people from the altar. And this plays into that whole myth of what the church is all about. Well, this myth continues at different levels. Now, this one little boy standing there, I'm being very honest with you. I'm not exaggerating it. This kid is now has the material to build a life that is going to be seen as him as a man looking down from the altar and checking out what's going on. And when I say this, I could say the divine liturgy, the hour, hour and a half, I could say maybe at very comfortably at least the hour that he was holding candles up there off and on. His attention was completely in the back and was so disruptive. You say it to the priest, but there's no supervision for these guys because there's no training, sad to say. They're just put up on the altar because they happen to be, what? Male. That's it. There's no major training. Okay? You're a man. Come up. You're a boy. Come up. That's it. And so these are the things that I've fought against all my life. These are the things that I've really tried very hard to change. And I have to tell you, the frustration level is very big. And so what do we do at that point? What do we do? Well, let me tell you about what's going on with this conference. We're putting together a conference, and I'll tell you about it in the last part of the show. I've been sharing it with you too. But last night I went to a meeting where it was young families, I'd say between the ages of 25, no, I'd say a little bit older. I'd say between 30 and 45, okay? These were, we call them young adults, adults, I don't know. Let's avoid the category, okay? Because to tell you the truth, I felt much younger than any of them. The hardness of heart, where their heads were at, was just remarkable. The conference that we're organizing costs money. It costs money to throw. So we put a nominal fee on there, $125 a person. For 3 days, you get the conference material, you get some incredible speakers, get meals for those 3 days for $125. And on top of that, we found some donors, people who want people to come to this conference, who said that we will pay for those costs. Okay. So we have scholarships too. Okay. We were up there last night at this meeting and they started an attack. How dare you charge $125? You know, this is church. You got to let everybody in. No, this isn't church. You know, let me talk about that because that's what I want. That's where I want to go with this. It's about the business of a church. It's not about making money. No, it's about taking the church seriously. These same people, last night I put them on the spot. I said, you go to Vegas. What do? The guy opens the door. You slip him a 5 or 10 for opening the door. Think about that for a moment. You didn't ask that person to open the door. He just did. But what is it? You're going to feed your ego by showing off in front of people and slipping them some money. Think about the guy who gets that money. He gets a 10 spot from you. Is he thinking, what an idiot you are? $10 and I opened the door. Think about that for a moment, right? My mom's in a wheelchair. Our moms, both of our moms, and Susan's mom the other day was traveling and came off of a plane. And from the plane to us where we were picking her up, she needed assistance to be rolled on a wheelchair. You understand, right? We are asking for that service. And so you tip them. You have to. This is a service that you are asking for. Yes, the airlines offers it, but it's the custom. But think about the door. What are you feeding there? You're feeding your own ego. Hey, look at me. I could pay for it. One of the guys got up and said, what is $125? He says, I could pay for it, but this shouldn't be in a church. Well, yeah, okay. Think about all that we pay for. Next week is the Super Bowl here in this country. Do you know that the beer companies, Budweiser, is going to spend millions of dollars to get you to buy a bottle of beer, to drink a bottle of beer? And we're not willing to spend a couple dollars to bring our kids to Christ, to bring them to the Armenian church? That's bizarre to me. It's really, really bizarre to me where our priorities are. They talk about, well, you can't do money in church. It's very interesting to me. I've heard that argument. Can't talk about money. In fact, when I was first ordained a priest, a woman came up to me. You know, Judas took money for betraying Jesus. And I thought to myself, wow. I mean, I was insulted at that time. I backed off. I was a young priest. I said, okay, don't give money. You know, but now I think about it. What? Judas took money for betraying Jesus? Is that what they're saying? That because we're taking money, we're betraying Jesus? No, it's an operation. There is a business of getting the message out. And think about that. Jesus Christ was the message. He came there. He gave us the message. He gave us that ultimate tie. Okay, Jesus Christ was there, the messenger that is the Son of God. He is there. So whatever he does is the God force in our lives right there. So you read the Holy Scriptures and you get it. Now, that Holy Scripture, how are you going to read it? Well, guess what? It's not just having a Bible in your hand. It's also learning how to read, right? You learn how to read through a process of education. You learn how to put together not only letters, but words. And that's an education. So there's an education process that you have to go through so you could learn how to read. And by reading, then you learn the scriptures. You have to listen. And who's going to talk to you? Who's going to share that with you? Well, you have a priest, you have a pastor, you have somebody who's going to transfer this message to you. And all of this, my friends, all of this costs money because all of those people need to live. They need to survive. And scripture says, a laborer is worth his wages. Okay, that's how simple it is. Let's get over it. The guy's laboring for the Lord. The guy's laboring in the church. You know, we need to account for all of this. Okay, now this isn't about these laborers too. It's not about, you know, go out there and give your priest a raise and everything. Those are nice ideas too. But it's just to say that there is a system to it. And we call that system a business. Now you do that in everything. Okay, you don't think twice about it. You want to make a few bucks. You spend a few bucks, right? If I want to make $20, it's okay to spend $10. Some people do it by organized system. Some people unorganized, right? Guy wants to make money, goes to Las Vegas, and he drops the money in there. But his intention is, hey, I'm going to make money, or I don't know what the intentions are, but there's a system to it. In the same way, we need to deliver the message out there. How do you deliver that message? Guess what? The paper costs money. Guess what? You're listening to me. You're listening to me right now. That computer, that MP3 player, that podcast, that internet connection that you're listening to me on right now, it all costs money. Just as the production side of this costs money. Okay, now where are you going to get that from? Now, thank God that there's different models, and I've always said this. Let's provide the material. Rather than selling something different, let's sell what we have. This is what we have. This is our podcast, for instance. This is the church that we have. This is the conference that we are organizing, and we're putting it out there. Do you want it? Here's the price for it, okay? If the price is a donation that goes towards paying for all these expenses. We have somebody coming out from London, another coming out from New York. Guess what? We have to put these people up. They're not asking me put up. They're so nice. They're so generous. They'll do anything. I mean, trust me, we've gotten 25 people come. Not one person had said, what are you going to pay me? Not one person, because they believe in it, right? And you know what? This is what I've seen throughout the church. These are people that really believe in the mission and what they are doing. So they count on us being equally as fair on the other side. And not everybody is fair, let me tell you that. So that's what happens. We need to make it a fair playing field. Just like same pay for same work between the sexes, you've got to make it fair the same way. We've got to make it fair, so we put a price on this. But it's interesting. The minute you put money into a church equation, it's like becomes a different game. How dare you do that? Nobody's daring to do anything. It's just having the maturity. Do you want something? Well, the system here is that you pay for it. That's how simple it is. And we got to get over this idea that somehow everything that's tied to the church is a freebie. You can't maintain that kind of model. Now, you did in the old country. You did. Why? Because, well, there was no mortgages. A few years ago when we went to the monasteries, these are monasteries that are in Armenia. You have to pay for very minimum stuff. Basically, the lights are the candles, and whatever candles you buy, you sell. Okay, there's a few dollars there, few drams there, right? There are laborers. They usually get their pay from different means, selling this or that, selling even services. And it's all part of the laborer is worth his wages. And when it gets to a bigger thing, for instance, putting together a conference where you've got people from throughout coming here, you've got to organize. And that organization takes money. It takes resources. I want to just share with you right now what we're doing with this conference is amazing. It's amazing. It's called Embracing Your Faith in a Changing World. Or embracing our faith even more, dear, right? When this idea came to me, it came to me because a couple people had told me they had gone to a conference organized by another church, not an Armenian church, another church. And you're talking about thousands of dollars. And you're talking about people who go to that conference for 3 days, totally commit to that conference. In other words, they get there and they are disconnected from the rest of the world for 3 days, enjoying, learning, taking advantage of the opportunity, and paying for it. And when it comes to the Armenian church, we're doing a conference. Well, how do you expect us to get there? We have families. Well, I don't expect you to get there if you have families. Absolutely, you have families. That's your priority. Everybody has a priority. But one lady got up last night, and she was very interested at this meeting. And she said, you know, when we were young and we had our kids were that young age, she said, if we wanted to go to something like this, we would ask our parents because this was priority to us. And that word hit me. It's just a priority issue. What's a priority in your life? What are you going to make as a priority in your life? Isn't that the ultimate challenge for all of us? You want spirituality? You want whatever you want in life, you make that a priority. Look at all the successful people, people who are in sports, the basketball player, every NBA star has made it a priority, right? Not only to learn the game, but to learn the mechanics of the game and learn the politics of the game. You're successful in work, right? You've learned. You've made that a priority, whatever that job is. And so too with your spirituality. You make it a priority. And guess what? Money is a way of identifying. Jesus says it straight out. Where your heart is, there so your treasure shall be. Where your treasure is, there so your heart shall be. And it works. It's a reciprocal arrangement. If your heart is someplace, you put your money there. If your money is someplace, guess what? Your heart is there. The word in Armenian, dram, spelled backwards, is mart, which means man. There is an interplay between man and money. Interesting, right? Dram, mart. Where your heart is, your money shall be also. Where your treasure is, your heart shall be also. These are the dots that we connect here. And it's an important dot. It's an important understanding that the church is, yes, a sacred institution, but at the same time has to work within the confines of the world that we have. And it's very, very important that we have this understanding and relationship between man and his church, money and that church, of our understanding of the church as a sacred institution doing sacred work, but doing it within the secular society it finds itself in. Now, that being said, I've got some exciting news for you. So why don't you hang on for a couple minutes? Let Susie make this announcement. I'll be right back.
Susie here again. Before continuing with today's broadcast, I'd like to take this opportunity to remind you that this podcast is made possible through your prayers and generous donations. We are now in the ninth year of producing shows which are heard around the globe. Since 2008, we've provided quality programming through podcasts, educational videos, and streams, using technology's most current resources. The message of Armenian Orthodoxy, or as Father Vazgen calls it, Armadoxy, is giving people an intelligent and practical answer to many of life's difficulties, including the challenge to bring peace to a hurting world. Please take a moment now to visit inhisshoes.org and press on the donate button. Your encouragement goes a long way. Thanks for listening and God bless. We now return to this week's Next Step with Father Vazgen.
Well, thank you, Susie, for that announcement. And thank you to all of you for your prayers, your wishes, your donations. Let me tell you something that's happening. I said an exciting announcement. Okay, we've been kicking around this idea of the electronic, the virtual church for several years, at least for 451 episodes. But even before that, we started with this idea of Epostle back in the year 2000 when we ran the first electronic broadcast of the Divine Liturgy. This is back in the year 2000 and primitive couplers and modems and everything. And now that I'm out of a parish, people keep asking me, where can we hear you? Where can we see you? Where church are you with? Well, guess what? God has given me this beautiful opportunity to be within the family of the diocese. So I'm at many, many churches. And we have no way of connecting all of those until a brilliant moment came into our lives, and that was Epostle. And so we're going to be developing the Epostle site. It's been kind of dormant, not only the Epostle site, but also the Epostle Facebook page. I want to invite you there, epostle.net. Right now, if you open it, it's still the traditional Epostle. It has all the podcasts. But we're going to try to make it into more of a church community, apostolic evangelism for an electronic and expanding universe, under that saying, under that those rules. And basically be a place where we announce where I'm going to be, where we're going to be preaching that particular Sunday, and also to have some opportunities for people to blog, share some of the information and from our services as well as the sermons. The Glendale Sermons from Glendale site is missing about 10 or 12 sermons. Those should be up within the next few weeks. And once those are on, the sermons from Glendale will be a solid package, and that will be closed. I mean, you're welcome to go there. It'll still be maintained. We'll continue paying the fees on it, but it will not be adding new programming to that. Everything will be moved over to Epostle. So that's exciting, right? Okay, we're going to actually create that virtual church. We're going to do what we've been talking about all these years through the next step, through all of our broadcasts and our videos, basically having a church that lives online. And so I'm excited about that. Meanwhile, we have the conference coming up. I talked briefly about it in the main show today, but there will be a link on today's show notes. It's called embracing-faith.com. And there you'll find information about it, registration. I did throw out last week, Next Step listeners, I would like you to be my guest. All you need to do is drop me a line. In fact, if you want, send it at feedback@epostle.net. And otherwise, when you go on the conference site, embracing-faith.com, there's a scholarship button. There's an opportunity for you to tell us a little about yourself. Just say, Father Voskin promised it to me through the Next Step. And we'll make sure that you get your tickets, okay? I'd love to have you there. It's 3 days in Burbank, March 10th, 11th, and 12th. We're going to have speakers that will be speaking, will be running the gamut on the kind of things that really interest people. Talk about how to raise children in this world, how to find the right partner, about ethics in the workplace, about a program called Merjuiz, a judge here in America, leaves all of the comforts of America to go and work with kids in Armenia who are basically one step away from being victims of human trafficking, basically sold in prostitution. Instead, she is created this environment where they find new hope and new meaning for their lives, and they are saved from the streets. Remarkable. We have a lady who's going to be talking about Till Death Do Us Part. Yeah. What happens? 17 years ago, her husband had a stroke, left him debilitated. Does she run out? What does she do? Or what does it mean, to death do us part? Being there and being by his side under the most difficult of conditions, and then realizing how important faith is to that entire question. Our good friend Gor Mkhitaryan, Gregory Baylarian, they're going to be part of this conference, coming out here talking and sharing their art, their music, their love. Just a wide assortment of people. My sister, I asked my sister Anish, you know her, yes. Had her many times. We had some different podcasts and stuff like that. She's a fierce prayer warrior. She prays, and she prays the prayers of Saint Nerses Shnorhali to the point where she's memorized those. And it's not just about getting up and memorizing. It's about living each of those words. We'll be talking about the 12 hours of prayer. And these next 24 hours, she happens to be celebrating her birthday. So happy birthday, Anush. we're all celebrating. Got all kinds of neat stuff. And in the weeks to come, I'll share more with you. But what's important right now, get out to the website, register for it, embracing-faith.com, and then do whatever it takes to get down here. Get down here, March 10th, 11th, and 12th. If you happen to be in this area, please, please block it off and be with us. I would love to be with you guys. Next Steppers are people that are very special to me, at least for the last 451 episodes, right? So thank you for being with us, and got a lot of great things coming up. I'm going to call it a day for right now. I hope you enjoyed today's show as much as we enjoyed producing it for you. I want to thank you and invite you to join us at all the usual spots, inhisshoes.org, at Facebook pages for all of us, and on all social media. Follow us on Twitter. Whatever you need to do, stay connected with us. And God's blessings be with you and with all of the people. Need those blessings. I'll tell you, there's a lot, right? Including ourselves. Pray for us, too. On behalf of the people who put today's show together, Susie, our producer, Ken, our engineer, this is Father Voskin inviting you to join us again next week when we will take the next step.
And now here's the fine print. The information and comments presented within this podcast and our website do not necessarily represent the views of the Armenian Church hierarchy, but are presented as a challenge to define the dynamics of Armenian Orthodoxy in all aspects of life. Listening to these shows is habit-forming. Addictive behavior associated with the next step is rarely, if ever, remedied. Rather, the next step is known to relieve and cure common cases of narrow-mindedness, prejudice, numbskullness, and glaucoma in patients over the age of 20. Results may vary depending on credit rating. Findings are based on double-blind studies conducted in Istanbul and Jerusalem. Side effects include mind expansion, clarity of focus, higher rates of heart palpitations, sensitivity to the pain of others, and occasional nausea. The management and production crew of vpostle.net take full responsibility for changes you will experience. Not valid with any other offer.
You're seeing the same sky as we are.